Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's Joe George, Andrew Carlson here with you for another hour on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just a reminder, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we have our Sunday edition of the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders are with you guys from 10 to 12, talking all things Astros, Rockets, Texans. We'll get into the Rockets a little bit later because the guy that everyone wants to sign sucks in the playoffs. Shocker. But like after all these injuries, you know, you look at the betting odds. The last ones I saw, most places have moved the Astros behind the Rays. Reasonably so. The Rays are 22-0 this season when they score in the first inning.
Their like stats are absurd. As a team, they're slugging over 500. They're slugging like 520 as a team. Do you understand how obscene that is? Yordan Alvarez is slugging right now. Is like he's slugging like 570. The Rays as a team are at like 520. The entire Rays team, on average, is all slugging better than Kyle Tucker is to this point in the season.
It's such a Rays roster. I don't know half these guys. Like they, like Yandy Diaz. He's 31. He's awesome. Like, Manuel Margot. Like nobody. Harold Ramirez, like these are not like big names that are just like they're crushing everyone, like, and that's goes back to how like the Astros season so far, like that series win is like super impressive. It is just what the Astros did in that series against Tampa was awesome, and like it's where I still do view the Astros as you know, like I picked the Astros to go to the World Series against the San Diego Padres. And to go back-to-back for the first time since the Yankees in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, that's how good I think this team is or was. And I think the answer is still is. Like, even with these injuries, like, if you roll out Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Hunter Brown, and, like, Lance McCullers as your 1, 2, 3, 4, and sorry, Jose Urquidy, you're not pitching in the playoffs again. Like, yeah, you're still, like, one of the best teams in all of baseball.
Absolutely. I will say, though, we have the question posed, do you still believe the Astros are the favorite to go to the World Series? As currently constructed, I don't think that you could possibly answer that question yes.
Yeah, they shouldn't be the favorite right now. It's definitely the Rays.
But at the same time, there's reason for optimism,
yeah.
Right? And that's the biggest thing with this team is the fact that they have treaded water for the length of the season thus far, despite all the issues and all the injuries and everything else that's gone on. So it gives you a reason to think, hey, once this team gets fully healthy, they're going to become the juggernaut that we all know and love, and they'll just start rolling. The only problem with that line of thinking is I kind of need to see it for first before I'm also going to just jump in head first and go, yeah, you know what, I'm ready to go all in on the Astros again. I want to see them legitimately get on a run and get on a roll before I'm all bought in. Yeah, this team is this the same Astros team that's been on this dynastic run.
Yeah, it's definitely different. And like, and we were talking a little bit earlier in the show about just like, you know, who is the, like what it, like who is like the, like how do you fix the rotation? Like, what do you trade for someone? And it's funny, I guess I was wrong. Like, I was looking at offshore books. FanDuel still has the Astros as the betting favorite to win the second betting favorite to win the World Series, only behind the Atlanta Braves.
That doesn't shock me at all.
Caesars, as of May 3rd, so this is pre-Garcia injury, to be fair, or diagnosis, they still have the Astros as the favorite. So, like, people still believe, which is makes sense because they've overcome injuries in the past. But, like, I do think that it would make me feel much better if they added a bona fide, like, starter.
what is bona fide for you? What is the definition of, are we talking a back end of the rotation innings eater who is going to have a, you know, maybe four or so ERA, maybe a tick under that, and someone who is just going to help get them to the postseason, and then once we get to the postseason, yeah, move to the four-man rotation, not be a contributor? Or are we talking about someone that you want to be a contributor in the postseason rotation?
I want someone to be a contributor. And, like, if I have my dream, like my ultimate dream, I want to know what the price is on Lucas Giolito.
Ooh.
I don't think you got that in the tank, but that White Sox team is going to tear that thing down. They're going to trade Giolito. They're going to trade Tim Anderson, probably Eloy Jimenez if he's healthy, maybe even like Luis Robert. Like, they're probably going to blow that thing up. But, like, in like the absolute perfect scenario, if you could acquire Lucas Giolito, I mean,
I would be all in on that. That would be fantastic.
Sorry, Jake Meyer. Sorry, Drew Gilbert. Like, I'm in. Like, I would do, like, that's probably the one guy, like, who I think is going to be available at the deadline that, like, I would put all my chips in and go get him.
And there are a couple pieces that the Astros still have to play with from their minor league system. You mentioned one there, Drew Gilbert. If you're ready to roll and say, hey, Chaz McCormick, you are going to be our everyday starting center fielder for the foreseeable future, that makes Jake Meyers expendable. That makes Drew Gilbert expendable. And if Yonier Diaz truly is going to become the everyday catcher like Dana Brown says he should be, hey, Corey Lee, you're one of the top prospects in the system. See you later.
Yep. Yeah, I think they have some stuff.
They have some chips to play with.
But the one thing that's interesting about just like with the new baseball rules and everything is like with the expanded playoffs is like there's more buyers than sellers. But this year there are some clear sellers. Like, not that Oakland has anything worth a damn. Like, I might try to trade for Tony Kemp, like as like just to bring him home and utility guy. But like there are teams that like were expected to be good, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Chicago White Sox. Like, there are teams that were supposed to be relatively competitive that are not, that maybe will do a big sell. Another guy that I've been looking at a lot, you know, looking at his career numbers, home road splits, is really interesting, because typically you look at a home, when a pitcher's at home and you see a 4.73 ERA.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Who you got?
Are you talking about Dramon Marquez from the Rockies?
Close though. Freeland.
Okay.
Kyle Freeland is a guy that, like, his road splits, now he's banged up right now a little bit, I think. But Kyle Freeland's a guy that, like, I think they just signed him. So, but they're the Rockies. They do crazy stuff. They traded Nolan Arenado, paid like a third of his contract, and then signed Chris Bryant the same offseason. Like, the Rockies are a bizarre team, but like that's a team, like that's the guy that Jake Meyers, I think, acquires.
Right.
That maybe even Chaz McCormick acquires. Like, to where, yeah, he's a depth piece. He's maybe not that front end guy. But also, like, if you look at home road splits for these Rockies pitchers and they're really good on the road, like, that's a flyer I'm willing to take. So, like, there are guys out there where, you know, I think we all assume Luis Garcia will be back for opening day, but you never know. I think we all should assume Lance McCullers won't be here for opening day next year. Like, it just feels like this is, like, the path we're on every year.
His spring training always extends for, like, hurt. 8 months at this point.
Yeah, like, Lance McCullers gets hurt, and, like, at some point, he comes back during the season. But, you know, you also, like, you know, you got some guys, like, are going to be free agents soon. So, like, you know, acquiring a starting pitcher in this moment when you need it, that's also under contract for a little bit, could be, like, very viable for, like, the long-term value of this team. So, there's a lot of options, but I think acquiring a starting pitcher is going to be a necessity.
So you have moved on from the fact that you don't think that the J.P. France, Brandon Belak experiment is going to be a Band-Aid that is able to keep the Astros afloat until they get to the point where they're healthy enough.
No, I don't. Because the one guy that I'm most concerned about right here, and not concerned, they have not directly said this, but I'm going to go on the assumption that, like most rookie pitchers, Hunter Brown is on a pitch count. And if I'm planning to go to the World Series, you got to keep that in mind.
You're going to have to start monitoring that as you get to the, like, back ends. Yeah.
Honestly, like, I kind of like the idea of acquiring a sixth starter to go to a six-man rotation like we all hoped they would do when Lance McCullers returned. And frankly, like, I don't trust Lance.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust that Jose Urquidy coming off the World Baseball Classic isn't going to have more injuries. that, you know, Javier's velocity stuff isn't concerned. Like, the World Baseball Classic, like, it's got me in my feels about, like, if these guys are going to be healthy or not.
And that what you just mentioned there with Lance is the big piece of him coming back, assuming it's going to be within the next 4 to 6 weeks. Like, it sort of sounds it's going to be based upon his comments. We don't have an actual timeline. That's just an estimation based upon what we've heard. So, assuming that it is 4 to 6 weeks, one, do you trust him to be effective? And two, do you trust him to stay healthy? And I don't know, like, if you can realistically answer either of those questions.
I
assume that he's going to be effective. I believe that he'll be effective. But when he came back last year from that massive amount of time off,
it was bumpy.
It was up and down. And in the playoffs, it was a lot more down than it was up.
Yep.
So, given what we saw in the return from him last season, which I think would be a, you know, relatively viable point for comparison, okay, if that's the Lance you get, cool. Can you trust that guy to stay healthy for the remainder of the season if you're not going to a six-man rotation? I don't think that the answer is yes.
Okay, and I'm just going to – we'll just throw it out there because this is – I know viral is a relative term, but there was a recent TikTok that got put up from the Killer Bees about a certain pitcher that you'll see on Tuesday night when Framber Valdez takes on the Los Angeles Angels. Like, is there any part of you, Andrew, that thinks the Houston Astros could acquire Shohei Ohtani for the most massive rental ever?
Could, in theory, yes. The problem is where you are most stacked from a prospect standpoint is where the Angels are most stacked. You would say that Corey Lee is arguably the best prospect in the Astros system right now.
Yeah.
The Angels, like, top three prospects are all catchers.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's not going to fly too well. So, I love Drew Gilbert and what he's brought to single-A baseball for the Astros. Dude. But Drew Gilbert is not going to be the centerpiece for a Shohei Ohtani trade.
No, the problem is they're going to want the guy who won't trade, and his name is Hunter Brown. Like, if the Angels were like, if you're going back and forth and you're Dana Brown, the second they mention Hunter Brown, click.
Yeah,
hang up.
That's the problem.
Because, it's, like, you're not going to pay Ohtani, so, like, I'm not giving up Hunter Brown.
Hunter Brown is going to be the centerpiece in any discussions for a player of Shohei Ohtani's caliber. And
God, would it be awesome.
As fun as that would be, and as amazing as it would be to have Shohei Ohtani be here for 6 months before he goes back to L.A. and signs with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Because I believe that's what's going to happen. It's just simply not worth it from a long-term roster-building perspective.
All right. We talked a lot about the pitching, but Chaz McCormick, Michael Brantley, likely back as early as Monday. Jose Altuve, not far behind. Where do we stand right now with the Astros lineup when all those guys return? We talk about it next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson here with you for another 45 here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Welcome to Bad Take Boulevard, Dr. Dre. He said, ship out Kyle Tucker for Shohei. I know Kyle's probably going to walk too, but I'd rather Kyle for like 3 more years than Shohei for 6 months.
Absolutely. Shohei would be awesome in the Astros outfield.
Oh,
he would be awesome in the Astros starting rotation. He would be awesome in the Astros lineup. That being said, a few months of Shohei is not worth 3 more years of Kyle Tucker. I don't care how you slice it.
Kyle's going to win MVP in the next 3 years.
That might be a little bold, but he's going to be in the discussion. And he's already a Gold Glove winning outfielder. Like, he is way, way, way too valuable for the Astros as a foundational piece over the coming seasons to trade him away for a rental.
Just really quickly, like, do you think that we talked about starting pitching. Is there a bullpen arm or the infield outfield situation is weird because, like, I don't really see how you make a trade to bolster your lineup because it's like you have Yonier Diaz, like you're not really going to trade for a catcher. I don't think you're going to acquire a big name center fielder. So like those are like your biggest needs. Like, cause you're not going to move on from Abreu. Like, I'm sorry. Like
The black hole of suck over at first base is here to stay. Yeah, like that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, Dana Brown, I think, will likely try to get out of that contract and trade him this offseason because he didn't sign him. If he thinks it was a mistake, I think Dana Brown will be aggressive.
It's going to be hard to get rid of him if he keeps playing.
Oh, you're taking on a bad contract with it. So I don't think you bolster the lineup besides like a depth piece. Like I think like a Tony Kemp is like you're like trading back for Ledmus Diaz, who I think is hurt. Like those are the kind of names you're talking about. You're not talking about an everyday starter. Like I don't think even someone of like Christian Vasquez quality you're obtaining.
Yeah, I know that the lineup has underperformed, not massively, but underperformed pretty decently to expectations thus far this season. But despite that, once healthy, there shouldn't, in theory, be a ton of spots where you can improve a lot, and the cost that it would take to improve just would not be worth it.
Yeah, like where you would want to improve might be first base, but like you're kind of stuck. Like,
hey, here's how you improve first base: play Michael Brantley there and put Jose Abreu's ass on the bench.
Like Jeff Bagwell made a mistake. Like I defended Jose Abreu, and I hope I'm wrong.
Look, I'm hoping that we're all on Old Takes Exposed 3-4 months from now when Jose Abreu is mashing.
But the hard hit contact.
There's just zero signs that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it's just, it's ugly. It's so ugly so far that, like, I'm texting, like, my, I know Jeremy tries to spin me as a White Sox fan. I am not. I'm a Cubs fan, like, if anything. But, like, I text, like, my buddies, like, and I'm like, who are White Sox fans. I'm like, can you, like, explain this to me like I'm five? Like, what did I get wrong? And they're all like, I don't know. And like a lot of them will be like, I'm surprised you guys gave him a 3-year deal. But like, because they could see it slowing down. But this is like shocking. Now, we had Michael Bourne on the Killer Bees earlier this week. And he talked about how, you know, when the Astros acquired Michael Brantley, that like he would talk to Brantley. And like it takes time to adjust to a new city and to a new team. And like maybe he's just not comfortable yet. And I hope it's that. Like I hope he's just like, you know, not in like the headspace like where he can be successful. You know, Tony Kemp bringing him up again. He was awful this season. He recently played the Rangers and like saw like his wife and children while they were there. And since then, like I saw one of the A's reporters tweet that like he's been like unbelievable. So like sometimes it's just like that like taste of home. So like maybe like I'm really like targeting like this White Sox series in like a week. That like maybe like that's like your, you know, you're playing the Cubs, then you're playing the White Sox. Like maybe like that's like your turnaround moment.
This is some last chance saloon stuff here.
Oh,
man.
Yeah,
because
it is.
The way that you were talking this is legitimately Hail Mary type thing.
Yeah, I'm hoping that like Friday, May 12th, 13th, 14th, like next Saturday when we're on the air, that like he hits two dingers against the White Sox at the Cell, and everyone's like, oh, he's back. Like, we're praying for miracles.
Yeah, I mean, because you mentioned it. The signs were there at the end of last season where he was trending. Like, he had his typical slow start last year, and then he trended back upward and was basically Jose Abreu for the middle part of the season. And then by the end of the year, things started to dip for him again, and he had trouble hitting fastballs, which is always a concern with players in that older age bracket, right? Because once you can't hit that fastball, then you start chasing after that, and once you're chasing after that, you're not really able to focus on anything else because you're so worried about getting that fastball blown by you and you're off balance for all these off-speed pitches. And it really seems like that's where he is at the plate right now because he looks befuddled by literally anything any pitcher throws up there. So the signs were there and you were just hoping that it was a blip and he was going to be able to get things back. Clearly, it wasn't a blip. I think that like everything that we've seen thus far is a guy that is just falling off a cliff in terms of his ability to play baseball at an effective major league level.
So the one guy that if you're not going to attack starting pitching and you can't attack the lineup, like maybe it is strengthening the bullpen. And I want to throw a name out here that like maybe gets the Joe Kelly, Trevor Bauer vibes. But does Chaz McCormick trading him to the Kansas City Royals, does that get you Aroldis Chapman?
I do not want Aroldis Chapman anywhere near this franchise.
Straight gas. Like, I think he got lit. He must have got lit up in his last appearance because he had like a 1.3 ERA. Now it's a 3.09.
I don't know what happens.
But, like, I don't know. Like, he's throwing 103, 102. Like,
he wasn't breaking 100 towards the end of his stint in New York. And all of a sudden, it's up to 102, 103.
Dude, like,
That's concerning to me. I want to know what's going on in Kansas City.
Start cheating. I don't care.
I need the Brian Windhorst. What's happening in Kansas City?
Can you see that they like brought that in?
Oh, that was a terrible bit. Was a terrible, terrible bit.
It's funny when we do it, but like they're like, yeah, we're going to make a whole segment out of this. No, man, we're making fun of you. We're laughing at you, not with you. And they thought everyone was laughing with him. Like sometimes you got bad producers.
It's part of the problem with the NBA. I mean, this is a total tangent that we've gone off the rails
that's
here
okay.
with now.
Rails but, are fun.
The NBA media and part of the problem in general is this like seeking virality versus seeking actual like hard hitting analysis and content.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Shaq tackling Chuck the other night was awesome.
And I feel like especially at ESPN, there's an issue where clips go viral, so they try to reproduce more of those clips versus actually producing good hard hitting analysis.
Yeah,
and it's a little frustrating to watch and absorb sometimes.
That's why I don't partake in any of it. I am a strictly NBA basketball watcher. And even that, I'm kind of out at the moment. Like, I watch as much as I can. It's just not a priority. But, like, the NBA programming, I just think is objectively terrible across the sport.
Agreed.
Even Chuck and Shaq, like, I think those guys are some of the funniest people on television. But it's hard to watch their product and when they just tell you how bad the NBA is all the time. Like, they say it's, like, the worst thing in the world. And, like, and you're like, wait, aren't I supposed to like want to watch this game tonight? And they're just telling you like how bad everyone is.
Yeah,
it's, like that's just
it's a little frustrating. Now driving us back to the Aroldis Chapman, no chance I want him in here in Houston. Like, is he having a renaissance in Kansas City?
Yeah,
that's cool. He would come in and he would immediately be expecting to be a eighth inning or ninth inning guy. I don't want him.
He's like your sixth inning guy.
Yeah, and he's never pitched in that sort of scenario before.
He's replacing Seth Martinez.
So, we just talked about how big being comfortable in your environment is for certain players. That is an environment and a situation that Aroldis Chapman has never been placed in, and I have zero reason to believe, one, that he would accept it, two, that he would be comfortable all of a sudden coming in the middle of a game. I just can't imagine a scenario where he'd be cool with that, and he would be comfortable enough to make it work.
Do you think it's Chaz, ultimately, though, that gets – you think that – like he's kind of the centerpiece for a move. Like I think really like that is that's one of the moves that Dana Brown attempts to make is take Chaz McCormick, trade him for a left-handed Phil Maton quality starting pitcher.
I believe that you're probably right about that. If I was a betting man, which sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. If I was to bet that there was a person on the Astros major league roster right now who was going to be the centerpiece of a trade to bolster either the rotation or the bullpen, Chaz McCormick is who I would bet on getting moved.
Yeah, I think it's Chaz and Jake are top two.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know who else. I mean, like, the stunner of all stunners would be, like, Dusty wins again and trades Johnny Ortiz. So that
I would lose it, dude. Just so Maldonado can make sure that he's behind the plate every damn
day. Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe Dusty was right last year because, if you haven't seen the news, Wilson Contreras, after signing a massive deal with the Cardinals, has been benched as their catcher.
Dusty knows.
A permanent DH left fielder and right fielder. So maybe Dusty was right.
Maybe he does know. Maybe Dusty really does know best.
All right, let's get into this lineup here. All these guys are coming back. What's the lineup look like for the Astros when they're at their healthiest? And, you know, look, it might be in the next, like, 3 weeks. We'll get into that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you on the bullpen till 2 o'clock. You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. So Chaz McCormick and Michael Brantley could be back as soon as Monday when the Astros take on the whatever they are, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I think that's the right name.
The Frauds of Anaheim.
Such a dumb. They should just leave. They're not really from LA. Just be like Oakland. Like, just leave the city. Like, go somewhere else. Just go somewhere else. Like, you're fine. Just move to Anaheim. Or are they in Anaheim? No, they left Anaheim, and they're in LA.
I have no idea.
I don't either. It's so stupid.
They've had the same.
You can't be
years.
Of two cities. Like, you cannot. You can't be like the when the Chicago Bears move. They're not going to be the Chicago Bears of Arlington Heights. Like, that's not how it works. Like, you just, I mean, maybe it should be, though. Maybe it should be like the Dallas Rangers of Arlington.
Would you accept the Anaheim Angels of Orange County? Would you be willing to accept that?
Okay.
So, do you have the same energy for the New York Giants and the JETS?
Yeah. They should be the New Jersey Giants.
Damn, fair enough.
They should be.
It's a lot of history that you're just throwing to the wayside there, Joe.
Your stadium's in a different city. It's in a different state.
You know how hard it is to build in New York?
I'm with him.
I'm saying, like, it's like you can't be the New York Giants and not play in New York.
Yeah, New Jersey's close enough.
I mean, like, look, the Bears are going to do this. They're going to call themselves the Chicago Bears, and they're going to be, like, an hour away from Chicago. But, like, you're from Chicago. So let me ask that. So clarification then, because I've been in Houston for 8 years now. So do people from Dallas, do people from Arlington say they're from Dallas?
Like generally.
Like the Cowboys are described?
So the way that I would say it is, it's probably similar to someone who lives in Katy saying they're from Houston to somewhere, to someone in Katy who talks to someone who's living in Houston saying that I live in Katy. But if they were to talk to someone outside of the Houston area, they would say, hey, you know what? I live in Houston, not Katy.
I say I'm from the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah.
But I just say I'm from Chicago because it's like, you don't know where I'm at. Like, when we throw some cities at you, like, you're never going to understand. All right. So the lineup, when these guys get back, everyone's healthy, knock on wood. I think this is actually wood, so it actually works. Jose Altuve bats leadoff, right?
Yeah.
Done. Easy. Michael Brantley, I'm assuming, is your two-hole hitter now.
That's basically what he's been his entire time as an Astro. I have a hard time imagining that Dusty isn't going to put him right back in the two-hole. Dusty is loyal.
They quickly moved up Pena to kind of get him going, but then they moved him back down again.
Yeah.
Which I don't really understand. He hit a couple home runs. I would have left Pena at two.
Dusty does some weird things with the lineup, but one of the things that he is extremely consistent about is with the vets, he does not move them around an awful lot.
Yeah.
Like, with his guys, and Michael Brantley, I believe, to be one of his guys, he's going to keep him in the two-hole as long as he is healthy.
100%. So Altuve, Brantley. Now, my issue with Dusty Baker, for the most part, is he's going to go this left-right strategy.
So outdated, so dumb.
It's very outdated, and my biggest issue with it is that where we're leading right now is that means Kyle Tucker is batting, like, sixth.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is where I wonder if there's any chance that if Dusty is adamant about going left, right, that to give Kyle Tucker the most at-bats, the Kyle Tucker moves to the two-hole. Like, if I have my perfect lineup, knowing that Dusty Baker, like, I'm going to keep his philosophy in place left, right, because I want my best four players – taking the most at bats, that means your top four should be Altuve, Tucker, Bregman, Alvarez. Like, that should be your 1-4. And then you go, I would go Pena right now, and then Brantley. And then it's Jose Abreu, and then it's Jake Myers.
Whoever's in center field, Jake, Chaz, whoever it may be.
And then it's whoever's your catcher.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is like the... if I had the perfect lineup and for keeping in Dusty's rules and philosophies, it should be Altuve, Tucker, Bregman, Alvarez, Pena, Brantley, Abreu, Myers, Martin. What I think it's going to be is Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, Abreu.
I'm 100% with you. I think that he's going to put Abreu 5, and it's going to drive the entire city crazy. And the only way that it's going to be fixed is if either Dana Brown comes down from the front office and says, hey, Dusty, Jose Abreu, he may have done some great things in the past, and he's got an awesome track record, but look, he's hitting 240 this season, on base under 300, hitting for zero power. We cannot afford to have that bat at number 5 in the lineup, and you're putting Kyle Tucker there.
I think if Dusty will bend his rules, then this is a little bit of a different conversation, because then it should go then Brantley can bat second.
And
right?
Then Tucker can be 5.
And Tucker can be 5. And I'm good with that. Alvarez is getting on base enough that Tucker's at-bats will not be severely diminished.
Right.
So, like, that's just the real question. Is like, is Dusty going to stick to his guns and go Brantley in the two-hole and go left, right, left, right past that? Like, that is, like, the ultimate question. Because I just think it's you're weakening your team with Kyle Tucker batting six. Like, he's the second-best hitter, maybe the third when Altuve gets rolling. But, like, having him bat sixth is just...
it's asinine.
It's malpractice.
It's counterproductive to what you want to be as a baseball team, which is to score as many runs and be as productive as possible. Having one of your best players that low in the lineup where he is consistently not going to be protected by the players that are around him. Like, okay, if Jose Abreu's fifth, and who we're talking behind Tucker, Pena?
I said Pena. I think it might be it'll probably still be Abreu.
Yeah.
Like, my guess is Pena's going to bat seventh. Like,
man.
I really think the lineup, like, it would go... like, if I could have Tucker fifth and get away from the left-right, my prediction would be Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, and then it's Alvarez, Tucker, Abreu, Pena, center field, catcher.
Yeah, see, I would switch Abreu, Pena, but I just... the way that Dusty has operated this entire season, and really with his time for the Astros, makes me think that Jose Abreu is not going to be batting that low in the lineup on a consistent basis. I understand it's happened a couple of times already this season, but... I don't think we're going to see him lower than sixth unless it gets to the point where the situation is just obviously not manageable anymore.
Yeah, and really, look, I mean, they did it finally. It took a while for Yuli last year. Like, it took a while for Dusty Baker to, like, kind of acknowledge, like, okay, we're moving Yuli and, like, lower into the lineups. So, like, I think that's where, like, I don't know. Like, I'm really actually, like, fascinated, like, what Dusty Baker is going to do. And then kind of like what the response is, because I can't imagine Dana Brown would be okay with Tucker batting sixth.
Yeah, you have to imagine he wouldn't be. And this is one of the fascinating parts about watching Dusty this season versus past seasons is that we have all become accustomed to him being so slow with his moves and changes within the lineup. Yet earlier on this season, we had Pena batting leadoff. And then within a couple of weeks, it was like, this is clearly not working. We're switching Chaz into there.
Yeah.
And it worked a dream.
Yeah. What do you think is the split between Myers and Chaz?
Well, it depends. How many fastballs does the opposing pitcher throw? Because apparently Jake Myers hits the fastball better than Chaz McCormick.
I think it's going to just be righty-lefty. And yeah. I think Chaz McCormick is going to be strictly against left-handed pitching.
That is just...
and maybe you'll see days where it's like they get... maybe Brantley doesn't play every day when he comes back. And maybe you'll get Chaz and Jake both in the outfield with Yordan as your DH. And like... Tucker's day off, you know, those are Chaz McCormick days now, so maybe he's not totally only against lefties, but I think his primary starts in center field are going to be, he hits lefties way better than he does righties. You know, the oppo home run is definitely his strength.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that's where Jake has played. It's not that, this is not an anti-Chaz thing.
It's more just, pro-Jake.
Oh, Jake has just done a full 180 for me, man. Like, he took out that leg kick, and he has just been a different hitter. He's more aggressive, like, he's playing outfield with it, like his throw out to second base last night. Like his arm looks better. Like he's playing with like a different confidence level. Like Jake Myers has, Chaz McCormick got Wally pipped.
Yeah. Like, Jake recaptured the form that he had when he initially came up. He's not all the way back there yet, but he looks way more like the Jake Myers that Astros fans started to love in his initial call up than anything we've seen post-injury.
Yeah, so I think you'll still see a decent amount of Chaz, just like with days off and the way they're going to operate this team. Like, it's not going to be a strict split, but, like, you know, it's just I don't expect him to play as much. Like, Dusty's just never been a Chaz guy. Like, I think what Dusty Baker did, I'm very pro-Dusty. Like, I have, like, obviously, like, being a Cubs fan, like, Dusty and I go way back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it... to like some of the like the, my least favorite moments
for good
my
and
life.
For bad.
Yeah, it's like hello Steve Bartman. Like it is, but like the one thing I that Dusty Baker did, the only time I've ever been like really anti-Dusty, I was like very upset with the way he handled opening the first 2 days of the season.
It was disrespectful.
I thought not putting Chaz McCormick in the lineup when they started the season, wore the gold jerseys, was like a total joke.
It was downright disrespectful to Chaz and everything he meant to the Astros in that World Series run.
Yeah.
You can make a very, very good argument that maybe if somebody else was playing center field, the Astros do not have that ring on their finger. and to not just give the man the opportunity to don that gold jersey and be out there and receive the cheers and the applause and the praise from the crowd in the city of Houston in that moment, it was disrespectful.
Yeah. 5044 asks us, how does Jokes figure into the mix? Yeah, when guys go down, so you're going to have the third catcher go down probably this week, probably this Bannon or whatever it is.
Rylan Bannon.
He goes down on Monday. So those are your two guys getting sent down when Chaz and Brantley return, and you've just got this like surplus of outfielders. And then when Altuve returns, it's a great question. Like, I think there's an argument that like Dusty doesn't like Chaz, and Chaz gets sent down.
This is when it gets figured out by a trade, is when probably, one of these guys gets removed from the roster.
It's probably Jokes. Like, Jokes probably just goes down in that moment, and it's not an anti-Jokes thing. It's just like, I don't think you're going to send down Hensley, even though, like...
He's looked really awful recently.
He's just your depth on the infield. Like, can you, does Dusty Baker and Danner, like, do they feel comfortable with Mauricio Dubon as really the only backup infield? Like, that's tough.
Also,
like,
depends. We've seen Michael Brantley playing first base.
Yeah,
like,
how
comfortable do they feel with Michael Brantley as an option at first base? That might factor into things.
100%. If they feel good about... Look, there's a path to where Michael Brantley is your day-off guy for Jose Abreu, and maybe Mauricio Dubon is playing third base, shortstop, second base every day. Like, it's like he's in for Bregman, next day he's in for Pena, next day he's in for Altuve, and they just kind of rotate through him, and they go with an extra outfielder, and then if you need to bring up an infielder, like, they'll make a change then. I think a lot of stuff's on the table for that spot. So I have a lot of questions. I don't know if we have any good answers. 0105 asks, Andrew, who's on top of the Premier League?
Not Arsenal. Manchester City.
I didn't know what the answer was, so I didn't know if that was a dig or not.
No, it very much was a dig.
That's
it was
harsh.
Not Arsenal.
All right, he's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. There was a name that's been floated on quite a bit in this city. About a return. His name is James Harden. But if you're watching the NBA playoffs, he is peak James Harden right now. We talk about the NBA playoffs and what's going on next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson here with you for another 15 minutes or so. You guys can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. Sunday edition of the bullpen tomorrow at 10 o'clock with BMAC, Sean Mapes, and RJ. We'll be back next Saturday from 12 to 2. For the second time in the history of the show, we will go back-to-back weeks.
We might get 3 weeks here, Joe.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
If we're not careful, we might mess around and go 3 weeks in a row.
How much of the NBA playoffs are you watching right now?
I've watched a fair amount. I've enjoyed it significantly more as someone who didn't watch a ton of the NBA regular season outside of the majority of the Rockets games.
Yeah.
It's just such a slog when your team isn't competitive to then also be asked to care about a bunch of regular season games that it's very apparent the players don't care a ton about.
Yeah. So Ari Alexander from KPRC reported yesterday that his sources around the league say that the James Harden return to the Rockets is inevitable. That sucks, man. I think the idea of bringing back James Harden, like, to the Rockets honks out there, keep that same energy is all I'll say.
I am a staunch James Harden defender. And I have sat here just dying on the sword over and over again as he failed the Rockets in the playoffs year after year. Now, to be fair to him, for the duds he had in the last couple of seasons, 18, 19, a little bit of 17 as well, he had some exceptional performances in the playoffs,
too.
Like,
yeah, this is what James does. He dropped like 40-plus the other night.
45, tied his career high.
And then he's been a nightmare the last two games.
Yeah, he's been abysmal the last two games. And
that's James.
Yeah, it's who he has been in the playoffs, and when you are a difficult shot taker to the way that James Harden is, and he clearly doesn't have the burst to get into the lane the way he used to when he was in Houston. I mean, his floater game has just evaporated entirely. That floater in the middle of the lane used to be automatic for him when he was in a Rockets uniform.
Yeah.
And now it seems like he can sometimes barely get it on rim.
And it's so funny because Embiid was out.
Yeah.
So, like, he took off. Like, he ball hog James, like, went off. Like, it's... Yeah. It was so James Harden that, like, it's just him. Like, there's no, It's crazy to me that, like, they're even talking about this. Like, where you're at as a franchise, like, you're so young, and you want to bring in a guy that, like, showed up fat and out of shape and, like, didn't work hard, and he jumped ship as soon as, the going got tough. Like, and it's his fault with how tough it got going. Like, he made the bad decisions. And then, like, you're just going to bring him back? Like, I'd rather just be mediocre again next year if I was the Rockets. But when Tillman Fertitta said we're in phase two and we're in win-now mode and learning to win again, for some reason, I think that includes James Harden.
I think it, for at least the regular season perspective, learning to win again, having James Harden in the fold would not be the worst idea in the world. I'm still a little bit on the fence, probably leaning towards bringing him back in versus not letting him, you know, do whatever it is that he ends up deciding to do this offseason. Just because of the fact that this Rockets team has looked so rudderless from an offensive perspective, and maybe that changes with Ime Udoka coming in. I hope that it does change with Ime Udoka coming in, just because he's someone who will have an actual philosophy and will hold guys accountable for the decisions that they are or are not making on and off the court, which is something that the Rockets haven't had under Steven Silas. So,
but that's where I don't get where, like, how does James Harden fit into that? Look, a coach that demands excellence on defense and James Harden?
At the end of the day,
oil and water.
Yeah, if the owner, if the ownership brings in Ime Udoka, they will have already talked to him about their plans for potentially bringing Harden back this offseason. So I would assume that he has already signed off and given the okay to something like that happening. Yeah. Because you don't make the level of financial investment they did in Udoka, what, $7.5 million a year, I believe, is his contract amount. So the guy's getting paid at the very, very top end of NBA head coaches. You don't make that level of investment if you're not all on the same page. And they even talked about it in his opening press conference where the front office, the ownership, and Udoka all on the same page on how they want to move forward. So if they've talked about bringing James Harden back, I guarantee you Udoka's on the same page with them.
Yeah, I think Jaylen Brown will be target one. And then I think there's going to be another move or two that would be in front of Harden. And then Harden is likely the fallback option of, like, if we swing for Jaylen Brown, if we go for X player, and then, like, and none of that works out. Like, you're going to hear Cam Johnson be thrown out there. Like, there's some players, like, who've had nice success. But, like, I'm looking, if I'm the Rockets, I think there's two paths to take. It's status quo, and it's build, and it's wait until a real superstar like Jaylen Brown is demanding a trade, or it's, well, I guess those two. It's like you status quo and you wait, or you make the move now.
Yeah.
Like, I think James Harden is this, like, weird middle ground to where, like, you're pacifying a child or a kid in the organization who wants his buddy James Harden to come back. Like, it just seems like a huge mistake. And, like, there's just, I'd rather just be bad again, like, if I was the Rockets.
You've got 60 mil or thereabouts in cap space to play with. So you're going to need to make some additions this offseason to the roster. The one caveat I will say to me potentially wanting James Harden back is, if you're bringing him back on a max level deal or something close to it, I'm out on that. Like, even if it would just be for two seasons, the way that he has performed and the way that injury issues have started to crop up over his last year and a half or so in Philly, you cannot justify a 40 mil plus a year type contract for James Harden of any length. You just simply cannot do that. That would be financial malpractice. It would be organizational malpractice.
Well, I think that maybe that is a big factor. Like, if they sign him to a deal to James Harden to, you know, where you could move the contract.
Like, if it was, let's say, 2 years, 50 mil or something like that. So it's 25 million a year, which is still an obscene amount of money.
Oh, you could trade that, though.
But that's a workable contract and something that, you know, if it's in that sort of ballpark range where we're no longer talking about putting James Harden at the absolute top of the salary bracket of which he could theoretically earn, then I'm in on that. But 50 mil, 40 mil a year, James Harden, see you later.
Yeah, and look, I get why, like, some Rockets fans are like, I love this idea because he's the best player in the franchise since Dream.
Dude, he is the sole reason.
Oh, relax, Josh. He thought I was going to say ever.
Dude, he's the sole reason that, like, I have a lot of positive memories as a Rockets fan from, I don't know, like,
I get it.
Like, people don't understand why myself and other Rockets fans don't harbor hate for the guy. And it's like, look, James is the main protagonist in like 90, 95% of my best memories as a Rockets fan.
Yeah.
And someone who is responsible for that. It's hard to hate that person.
Yeah, he's just, I just don't think he's just not that guy anymore, I don't think. Like, yeah. I just think where you're at as a franchise, he just doesn't fit. Like, it's like, I mean,
you're going back to your ex after she dumped you.
I was still,
and
like,
you don't need to do that.
I still wouldn't rule out that, like, all of a sudden they figure it out, like, they ball out and the 76ers won a title this year. Like, the way the playoffs have been going so far, like, it's wide open. Like, they can beat Boston.
Yeah, Boston is there for the taking.
And then
you saw that in the Atlanta series.
Yeah, and then like the Knicks or the Heat, like you can be Jimmy Buckets is back tonight, or I guess in 30 minutes, you know, for the Heat. Like, I don't know who's going to win that series. Like, it's going to be fascinating. All right, he's Andrew Carlson. You can find him on Twitter at Carlson Radio, producer of The Wheelhouse Monday through Friday from 3 to 7, and producer of Soccer Matters on Tuesday nights. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. I'm with the Killer Bees Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. We are back next Saturday here from 12 to 2. Thanks to Josh and Jaron for helping out. We will talk to you guys next week.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.